One of the biggest obstacles I find for people practicing meditation is what I would call the on-again, off-again practice. A meditation that goes through periods of intensity and activity and then drifts off. Periods of real commitment and wish, and then periods of being really, truly, and deeply lost. This can happen over the course of a year, it can happen over the course of a month, it can happen over the course of a single meditation. The thing that keeps us focused in a practice is something Rudy called the wish. And he defined it early on as a wish to grow, or a wish to be happy, or a wish to be fulfilled, to be a whole human being. And each of us tends to have that wish deep within us somewhere. This idea of, in a sense, bettering ourselves, becoming a more effective, more complete human being. And so every so often we go on a crusade in ourselves to make ourselves better. Lose weight, go to the gym, study more, sit more as a meditator. And these periods are usually quite wonderful, and then they start to become effortful. The first 4 days of any diet is really fairly easy. The fourth day, fifth day, sixth day, it starts to get harder. The commitment wanes, the weekend comes, the party, and the diet is over. You go to the gym, it's great the first week, 2 weeks, you go, you feel great, you look in the mirror, you feel great. And then the third week comes and you go, oh my God, do I have to do this today? And then quite often you don't. And so a week goes by and 2 weeks go by and you say, I got to go back to the gym. And you kind of get yourself back on in gear for a day or two, and then over. So many of these opportunities to grow and change are so short-lived, and they're short-lived for a lot of reasons. One of them is that the mind is very, very distracted. It has so many things it wants to do, it cares about. Mostly it wants pleasure. Mostly it wants avoidance of pain. And unfortunately, the experience of change or growth involves a lot of pain and limited amounts of pleasure, at least at first. The pleasure tends to come as a state of being, and the displeasure or the pain comes in the actual effort of change, the actual experience of transformation. And so the avoidance of pain tends to win out over that sense of well-being that often is what really comes from people who sustain their effort. So I guess the question is, how do you sustain an effort? How do you sustain your practice so that it actually is effective, so you have results in your practice and not just the illusion of some effectiveness? Spiritual life, unlike your day-to-day personality experience, your worldly material existence, a spiritual life comes from a deeper need. And it's really one of these needs that comes to a person at a certain point in their existence. People who are listening to me as I speak, people sitting here, have already identified this need somewhere, or you wouldn't be here. Something in you is looking for something that life doesn't bring, that all the dieting in the world, all the gym workouts that you do somehow are not satisfied by this deeper need. Once you've found this need in yourself, which is often an inarticulate need, it's a kind of hunger, it's a kind of sense of wanting to touch something deep and profound in oneself, something that cries out in a very quiet way to be acknowledged. It's something that says there is more to life than anything you have experienced so far. And it starts to make itself known in a very profound longing. Something that allows you to sit down quietly and says, I want to find this. I want to know this. And you can't even give it an exact name. Some people call it peace. Some people call it truth. Some people call it higher consciousness. But there is this longing for it inside. And then you try to find a path to this very thing, to this very unnameable quality of existence. And the only thing one tends to know is that most of what you tried to do in your day-to-day life hasn't really given it to you in any established way. Finding a perfect sexual partner, finding the perfect 5-star, 4-star meal, going to the perfect ball game, whatever it is you think that's going to really give you that sense of perfection, tends to be very limited and very short-lived in the world. And there's something in us that wants something deeper, more profound, something that touches, if you will, the infinite. And for some reason, there is something buried deep within every one of us that knows that it's possible. We know that we can find this deep inner space. And the thing that brings us to that space somehow has to do with being still. Because it's not found with the mind, it's not found simply with the heart and the emotions. It's found in a more unexplored and, in a sense, secret space. It feels hidden because nothing in the world seems to truly lead us there. And in all of the mythology, it seems people who are looking for this thing are told you've never really lost it. In all of the old stories, you go around the world and you come back to the place you began. You click your red shoes together and are told that the truth of what you were looking for has always been at home. And the secret is that if you search the whole world and don't find it, it's because you've never looked at the one place that it is, which is, it is within you and it is you. And finding that truth comes from something very simple, which in a certain sense is letting go of the search and just being. The problem is our mind is not still. Our body is not still. Our emotions are not still. To find the thing you're looking for is to be totally present with what is in the moment. And so as you approach the moment, and your mind goes, I don't like this moment. It should have been a different kind of moment. It's not, this isn't the right moment. Or your emotions are going, why didn't so-and-so do this thing for me yesterday? Why did this happen? And so your mind is off in another space. And your body is going, oh my God, won't he shut up and be done with this thing? And can't I just move and get comfortable again? All of these things keep you from being in this moment. Bringing yourself to the moment for most people means creating the perfect moment. Creating this experience of being in the right place at the right time. But the truth is, this moment is that moment. Wherever you find yourself is that moment. So if you are in the middle of a discussion with your children, or if you are on an angry phone call with Amazon.com, or you are walking through the woods and you slip and you fall and hit your head, whatever the moment, the oddity, the irregularity of the moment is still the moment for you to go, this is it. And to find that in yourself in that second is to awaken to the truth that the thing you're looking for is in the oddest of all places, here. And those places don't have to be special. They don't have to be arranged in a particular way for you to know this. You simply have to take that second to look and say, this is that. This very second is that. The real question is, why don't we do that? Why do we find that moment and lose it again over and over? Why are we so continually in our practice and off of our practice, trying and forgetting over and over and over? It's why I can sit here week after week and make the same speech, and why that speech actually seems to be relevant week after week. Because part of us has already, since last Sunday, lost the path. Lost the way. Now, it's not true for everybody, and it's not true universally, but most of us get pulled back into the distraction of life. We forget that the moment we're in is somehow part of the whole. We think it's our own private drama, our own private struggle. We forget who we are, and we forget so regularly that we have to find mechanisms to remember. And every meditation form creates a mechanism for remembering. Some are repeating mantras over and over and over and over. Any of you who've ever done mantras probably knows you can actually sit with a mantra and about 6 minutes in, you're thinking about anything but the mantra. It's still going on. But you're thinking, and you're a million miles away from Om Mani Padme Hum. Rudy used to say, stop during the day and take a breath. Take a breath. And relax, exhale, and be present. Just remember who you are. He said you can do it a million times a day, and it will bring you back to this truth of presence. But what happens is you go through a day and you forget to do it. You go through 2 weeks, you haven't done it once except in class. Here you are with this desire, supposedly, for a spiritual life, and you cannot remember 3 times during the day to take a breath. Nisargadatta Maharaj did a practice called I Am, a kind of mantra. And he would simply repeat to himself, I am, I am, I am, I am. He did it for 3 years. And one day, he realized who I am is. and it changed everything in him. It completely changed his being. His teacher said to him, your whole practice is repeat I am and know that you are the supreme reality. That's your whole practice. What do you do with that? He just went, I am, 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 I am. I am is a very interesting mantra. I spent months trying that once I read about Nisargadatta. And then I had this meditation, which I've described to some of you, in which I was sitting going, I am, I am, I am. And then a voice said, you know, before Bruce was, I am. And that was deeply awakening for me. Because I'd always heard Jesus say, before Abraham was, I am. And I never understood that. But when I heard, before Bruce was, I am, I went, oh. This sense of I am, of being, of existence, precedes me. It precedes my existence as Bruce, as this person, as this particular life. It somehow was there before Bruce was there. The sense of I am precedes us. We have this enormous, deep, profound sense in our being that we are, that we exist. And we call that I am. And we speak that I am regularly. Somehow we are always talking to the universe, going, I am happy. I am miserable today. I am having the worst day. I am so thrilled. You are constantly reporting this I am to what? To what? Why are you saying this all the time? I am. Why are you affirming this constancy of being? Because something in you thrives on knowing that it exists, on knowing that it is a profound expression of some remarkable, supreme being. Even in your daily struggles, you are constantly reaffirming that being in yourself. You don't think of it as supreme being, you think of it as my problems. But your problems are part of something vast and real. And what happens is we, me as much as you, forget that every day. We get brought back down to the limited, tiny little struggle of our personality and of our little life. But once a week, you're brought back to this environment, or you come to this environment where someone sits and tells you, remember. Remember, take that breath. Ask for help to surrender. Let go of yourself. Let go of your petty little concerns for that 10 seconds. Remember who you are. I have a plaque downstairs in both homes that says, "Be still and know that I am." From the Bible. Be still and know that I am. To me, that is the teaching. The problem is getting yourself to be still, getting yourself to remember often enough to be that. Rudy said what is crucial in the practice of a spiritual being is what he called the wish. The wish is the thing that animates this search, that makes it constant, that makes it real. Without the wish, you won't do this. Without the wish, you live a life misguidedly seeking out whatever pleasure you can find in the moment because you think that will give you the happiness that you're looking for. Anyone who's lived as long as I have, and probably everyone who's lived as long as you have realized nothing has given you happiness that lasts for all that long. Happiness is transitory. Everything in the world is transitory. There is nothing you will ever get in life that will not betray you, because it will not last. It cannot last because you don't last. Your being comes into existence and goes out of existence. But your being rises out of something which does not cease to exist. And when you start digging really deep into yourself on a daily basis, and you go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, you connect with this ground of being, and you discover that is the source of I Am. Before you rise out of this ground of being, you already are as this eternal space of existence. You are the ground of all existence. And when you come to know that, then this rising of your personality and this declining of your personality or your ego is perceived as what it is, an extraordinary ride, an extraordinary journey through existence. The journey through existence is so powerful and so desirable that all beings manifest to taste it. But the problem with the tasting of it is it's so compelling and it is so distracting that you forget who you are, and life becomes sad and it becomes painful and it becomes this unbearable struggle for many people, full of grief. Trying to remember who you are transforms that. It changes the nature of your existence. It allows you to live a life of conscious awareness. You see you within the vastness of your being rather than cut off from the vastness of being. You see yourself as one with the whole rather than uniquely lost as a particle drifting off in space. Our practice is to remember to do that. That's the whole of our practice, remembering to do it. How do you do this? How do you get yourself every day to arrive at that place where you care to pursue this in some depth? How do you do it so you don't forget all during the week who you are? How do you do it so you don't, as Rudy said, at 3:00 in the afternoon realize you're awake? It's called conscious effort. Conscious effort. It starts in the morning, for me it does, with sitting down and meditating. Sitting down and meditating means one thing, bringing myself back to my ground of being. Sitting there and watching the noise of the day, which has not yet completely entered me. It's starting to, but it's not there yet, so I still have a quiet period. And I just sit there and I feel the connectivity to the depth of my own reality, and I feel it there as a support for and as a engine for the day. And then as I go through the day, I try wherever I can to take a breath, or something even simpler than that, which is I try to shift my consciousness, and I'm talking a 1/16 of an inch, that's how Rudy described it, shift of consciousness that goes, oh yeah. And you go from being lost to being found, from being unconscious to being conscious. You remember who you are. It is not hard, but it takes consciousness. It takes remembering. It takes constancy. And learning to be constant is the real spiritual practice. How do you get yourself to go back to that 1/16 of an inch? And go, ah, yeah. And all you go back to is, I am. You go back to the sense of, I exist. I am one with what is. I am alive. I am present. I am here and now. This is real. This is what is. That's what you come back to. And when you touch it, the way you know you've touched it is your whole body fills with it. It goes, and you can't believe you ever walked away from it. You can't believe you ever left it behind, that you ever forgot it. You can't believe that you were that dumb. And approximately 4 seconds later, you have lost it again. In India, in Hindu theology, they call it the gopis' dance with Krishna. The gopis are these feminine forms that dance with the male form. And the male form is Krishna, and what does Krishna do? He hides regularly. hides behind the tree, and they go, there you are, there you are, and they're totally in love, and they feel Krishna's presence, and then he's gone. And they go, oh! It's almost like, peekaboo, I see you. It's that kind of innocence that we all have. God, truth, energy, consciousness disappears, but by our constant dancing with it, it reappears. And every time it reappears and brings us joy as though we were finding it for the first time. If you watch a child in the peekaboo phase, every time your face appears, they're so shocked and surprised. It's like the most wonderful thing that could ever happen in the world. You've done it 20 times, and they're still like, oh, it's so extraordinary. That's exactly what we're like every time it reappears. There are people who I've met who have said they have come to a point where they don't forget anymore. They, if you will, have climbed to the top of the stairs. When you get to the top of the stairs, you're at the top of the stairs. You don't get to the top of the stairs without climbing to the top of the stairs. The practice that we have, which is a daily practice, which in a sense is a minute-to-minute practice, but it's really just this climbing. And I think at some point where you've had this experience constantly enough, this sense of awakenedness constantly enough, what you start to realize is that you're leaving it less and less. It's becoming the greater presence in your life. It's becoming the sustenance. It's becoming the ground of being. And the ego, daily journey that you're on, is the lesser important part of your existence. So it's a shift into a form of truly waking up. And that is all we're trying to do. And what we're trying to do is to motivate ourselves daily to be there enough that we can really experience this change in ourselves, this change from mostly asleep to mostly awake. And in truth, most of us are really mostly asleep, with little glimmers of awakening. But if you get those glimmers to go more and 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 more, you really come to this place where you can start to really turn your life into more awake than not. And that awakening is described mostly by people who've done it as realization. It's just a realization. And that realization is, I think, I am. That's the realization. I am. That this isn't some dream you're in. This is real. That your existence isn't some fabrication, isn't some practice for something else. This is the real thing, right now, this very second, is completely and absolutely real. Your perspective on that reality is limited, perhaps, by your mind, body, and emotions. Your perspective at this moment in time is conditioned. But if you can let go for a moment of your mind, of your emotions, of your body, just for a little moment, it becomes unconditional knowing. The mind limits us to the body and the personality, but let go of that for 10 seconds and you actually touch the infinite. You touch the eternal and you realize that it's there all the time, all the time. And the only thing that keeps you from knowing that is returning to this little tiny sense of self. For the rest of your life, your practice will be changing the equation so that you let go of your mind, thought, emotional, bodily sensibility more and more and more and more and more. And you exist as deeply and completely as you are capable of in unconditioned truth. Satchitananda, truth, consciousness, and bliss, the nature of reality. And it's the nature of your reality right this second. And if you don't feel it right this second, it's because your conditioned mind, body, emotions are so strong that they are keeping you from knowing what is. This practice, this stillness, will allow you to quietly separate from that. You take a breath. You ask for true help to surrender, the kind of asking that means it. And for 10 seconds, everything falls away, and it's just you and what is. And that's enough for every human being. So you need to get past the on-again, off-again meditation by developing your wish for this to occur, for this knowing to arrive, for this awakening to be. It's your search, it's your passion, it's your desire, it's your hunger for this. And of course, there comes a point where your own hunger has to be given up. Your own desire has to be let go of, because it becomes something that separates you from the very thing you're looking for. So you have to bring yourself to the edge of the diving board, and then you got to jump. You're not standing there as you're falling through the air saying, I wish to surrender, or I wish to jump. You jumped. You bring yourself to the cliff, you bring yourself to the edge, and then the wish takes you into the next step. And then you just trust that you're going to hit the water well, or trust that you'll enjoy the whole ride down. That's really our practice, and we do this every day. And the more constant you are with it, the more you will have attainment, meaning you will be more continually awake. It's worth doing. It's worth reminding yourself every day, as often as you can. And that's what we'll do sitting in this room. But once you leave this room, you're on your own. And in truth, mostly you're on your own. So it's your game. Any questions about any of this?
I used to work off a great deal of pain, like in the old days, and that pain has receded, and I still have a wish, but I feel like I can't quite get as deep as I used to be because of that pain.
Right. That's a very smart observation. I mean, a lot of people's spiritual work comes out of suffering. In fact, that's often what gets people to spiritual work, is that they are in such a state of suffering that they look desperately, cry out for help, and help comes. And help eliminates much of the pain, but it doesn't release you from, if you will, the more subtle bondage of still being. Of still being in a world of desire, being in a world of attachment to your body, your name, your personality, your all of that stuff. And so the work has to become subtler, and you have to become more discriminating in what it is that motivates you to do this, to make this effort. Part of what is ultimately, I think, very motivating is the fact that your body is in the process of, or certainly will soon be in the process of, deteriorating. Your physical existence is going to cease to exist, and you are going to be moving into dissolution. Like it or not, that's the nature of human experience. That can be very awakening for people. It's not exactly painful, although it often is, but it is something that tells you what I am and what I've held on to and what has motivated so much of my existence is leaving. And you know that there is something left undone. There's something left to be recognized. There's something still not satisfied. The peace that you're looking for in life is still somehow evasive. And so you trick yourself back into the deeper search, because it will come as a natural thing just out of changes. You know, as life starts to get more difficult, it won't be suffering and pain in the same way, but it will certainly be, things are not what they were. Everything is shifting. The ground that I have always walked on is no longer stable. And that provokes this kind of deeper work in the spiritual person, or someone who doesn't have a spiritual life. It provokes golf, going out and you know, and playing cards, doing a lot of drinking, you know, and looking the other way as hard as you can. But for a spiritual person, it's turn your attention to the dissolution, turn it to the very thing that's going on, and use that to awaken you. Just remind yourself, time, if you will, is running out. And it really does. Time runs out. For a lot of people, time running out brings you to a final moment. Hopefully you're conscious for that moment where you go, I have run out of time. At that point, you have either entered the timeless now, or you are freaking out like mad. One either enters and embraces now, which is the opportunity that you have really this very second, or you wait until the very last possible gasp of existence to embrace now. The encouragement of a spiritual life is to do it now, because one, it makes the rest of your life a lot sweeter on some level. Also, when you get to that final now, it isn't so final. You've been there for years, decades. You go, oh, nothing really is happening. I'm just still in now. You know, the body's going away. Everything I ever knew ever is going away. But in truth, it's been going away the whole time. This is the slow motion version of getting to now. But you can do it. And if you do it in the present, you live a very different life than if you're starting to get this thing, which I see in most people who get old, this enormous fear and aversion to their own death. This fear of dissolution. It's really overpowering. And it creates a kind of mind-numbing insanity in many people. They just are not living in reality at all. And so you, being spiritually directed, can now take that truth that is arriving and use it as your work. Use it as the way to work. Everyone who's getting older has that opportunity. People in the mid-range, you know, or when we were young in the early days with Rudy, you know, that was, you know, the pain of what am I going to do with my life, and, you know, and who's going to be in my life, and what's going to happen, and why isn't God giving me all the things I want? That's over. That's over for most of us. It's a different thing that's occurring. I mean, not for everybody. There are people in this room who are still going through that particular pain. But at the point we're at right now, something else is coming in, and either you pay deep attention to that, or you do what I described. You get to the last gasp and pray at that moment that you figured it out. Because running out of time and having it all disappear is for many people a kind of grinding yourself into a state of pure panic. And that panic is there after time leaves. It's called hell. That's what people, they just get locked into this frozen no time state of terror. You don't want that. It's not worth it. Figure it out now. I mean, I'm not trying to be, you know, fire and brimstone preacher, but it is, the reality is, the opportunity to do all this comes during your lifetime, and that people don't do it is amazing. It's amazing, but they don't. So we have an opportunity to know who we are now. It's an important thing to do. George?
How do we hone our inner dialogue, make our wish grow?
You know what Rudy said, which is really kind of interesting? He just said, repeat it over and over and over and over. I wish to grow, I wish to grow, I wish to grow. He said, and there will come a point where you'll be so disgusted by the weakness of your wish, by the superficiality of what you're saying, that you'll actually see yourself. And you'll actually realize you don't want it. There's nothing in you asking for it at all. You'll start to see how empty your own sort of desire or need is, and at that moment you might just click into the reality of the need. The need is what finally motivates, not the wish and not the wanting, but the need. And we are truly, George, at that point where need is emerging. This is no longer about, I think I want this, right? You know, we are, you know, life is diminishing in a very real and interesting way. This is either where we get the culmination of years, and in our case, decades of work, or not. And you cannot...
Well, I like what Rondas used to say. As you get older, you can't see, you can't hear, you might as well meditate.
Right. No, that seems right to me. But if you haven't had that instinct in you for most of the life you've led, it's hard often for it to emerge at that point. Rudy often said meditation is really a young person's work. And, you know, if it's initiated and inculcated in your existence as a young person, it will be available for you when you're old, when you really need it. And believe me, there comes a point of really needing it. What I watch for most old people is they go towards sleep. And you really want to go toward awakening. Anybody else? Okay. Thank you very much. No class next week. The 2 weeks after that, there will be class, and then not a class, and then there will be Labor Day weekend, and those will be the next. Those will be the three classes until October. So I look forward to seeing any of you who return. Thank you.